Outkick the coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Welcome back in. Final hour, Monday edition. Hope all of you are having a good time. We are here in the Outkick studios. Call 1-888-FARMERS to switch, and you could save big on your auto insurance. It's really the best thing you can do with your phone. In a few minutes, just call 1-888-FARMERS and start saving today.
We are farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Been talking about throughout the course of the program today the fact that the South is under siege from snow and ice, and I know all you guys out there that have been reacting throughout the show and throughout the weekend, as I've let you know, you don't have a lot of sympathy for us, but we are under ice attack. Dub, it's serious here. We like in Nashville and many other areas of the country like this, Alabama, Mississippi, Arkansas, a little bit of Oklahoma, Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina. We're always like right on that line as to whether or not we're going to get snow or ice. And I just like every single time, oh, it could be snow, it could be ice, it could be a cold rain. First time in 5 years, we're getting a ton of it right now.
Yeah, and I'm from Texas, so this is not a normal thing for me by any stretch of the imaginations. I've been monitoring this weather situation, and I know you've said you're somewhat of a weather nerd.
I'm the snow czar.
Exactly.
When I did local radio in Nashville, I would take over weather-related concerns because we did a lot of local radio, and I would talk about weather-related issues during the course of the show.
Yeah, so I've been kind of tracking on my various weather apps that I have on my phone and kind of just mainly focusing on the low temperature projections.
Yeah.
And they're pretty frightening. I started doing this last week looking ahead, and it's actually a little bit better than it was supposed to be because I was at a wedding this weekend in Kentucky.
Was it outdoors in
no,
any way?
No, God, no.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't, okay. People would have probably literally died
if
it was outside. But the projected low was going to be -2. Now, it was not -2. It was more like 20, but still, with the wind chill and everything else involved, it was bittering cold.
Yeah. Bittering cold, bitterly cold maybe is the word you're looking for there.
Yeah, somewhere there, right there. Yeah, the cold's kind of getting to my vocabulary here.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. And unlike our previous producer, Jason Martin, you have made it in. So that's at least a positive. Are you done for the rest of the week too after today?
I don't know. If this weather keeps up, I might just mail it in for the rest of the week since you're not going to be here. But I am scheduled to work through Wednesday, and then I'm going to take Thursday, Friday off. So we'll see.
All right, so for everybody out there, Danny G's already out. We've got Brian Finley in doing the update, so Eddie Garcia is out. Did Roberto ever come back? I don't even know if Roberto ever came back from his taking days off for the Super Bowl. But I'm scheduled to be in Mexico tomorrow, although I have no idea if I'm going to make the flight out tomorrow morning, whether it's going to be able to take off or not, because we're in the middle of this winter storm and people think, oh, surely the airports are still going to run. I ain't that optimistic that that's going to be continuing. So we've been breaking down a bunch of stories over the course of the show so far. I encourage you, by the way, go download the podcast, make sure you don't miss a single minute. And one of those stories we just talked about at the top of the second hour, we're going to talk about it a little bit with Bobby Barak in a moment. I know as many people on the West Coast are waking up, this Gina Carano story. She went 7-1 as an MMA fighter and then decided to go into entertainment. She, like you, Dub, also a Texan, and she made some comments in the last week and ended up losing her job on The Mandalorian, which is a very popular Disney Plus show, as a part of this cancel culture that we find ourselves in now, where people are constantly losing their jobs, even though what she said is honestly nowhere near as ridiculous as what other people have said on the her speech is considered to be conservative as opposed to the liberal speech, which you can make and get away with no matter how ridiculous it is in Hollywood right now and in the world of sports. So I think that will be a story that we'll unpack in a bit with Bobby Barak, who is scheduled to join us. But we started off the show talking about this, and I do think it's interesting as we now are fully into the NFL offseason, as we get closer and closer to finding out what the overall NFL salary cap is going to be. There are right now, by my count, 8 different quarterbacks that are available in theory who are former first round draft picks and have started a game or played significantly in a game in the last 2 years. Really started a game is the category that I am putting into play here. Last 2 years, they have started really multiple games. And I'm curious, how many of these guys do you think could potentially become big-time playmakers going forward? Is there anybody out there who could be a Ryan Tannehill-like reclamation project? And so here are the 8 guys, former first-round picks, in no particular order, and then I will tell you in order how I would break those guys down and what I think of them going forward. All right, here are my 8. These are in no order, and then I'll give them to you in order. Former first-rounders that are theoretically available right now: Dwayne Haskins, Cam Newton, Marcus Mariota, Jameis Winston, Carson Wentz, Teddy Bridgewater, Mitch Trubisky, and Sam Darnold. Okay, 8 former first-round draft picks that could be had right now by a new team that could hope that they are going to be the Ryan Tannehill going forward. How would you rank those 8 guys? Here's my run at it. Dub, you tell me what you think of these rankings. I've got Sam Darnold 1, Carson Wentz 2, Marcus Mariota 3, Jameis Winston 4, Teddy Bridgewater 5, Mitch Trubisky 6, Cam Newton 7, Dwayne Haskins 8. That is the order that I would have grabbed them, with the idea being, could I find another Ryan Tannehill? Now, let me explain a little bit why I've got them ranked as follows. I believe Sam Darnold we haven't seen enough of, but I think he's shown glimmers, and he's so young right now, I'm not sure anybody could have won with the Jets. Carson Wentz has played at an MVP level before. Marcus Mariota has taken his team to the playoffs and won a game there. Jameis Winston has shown flashes of brilliance. I feel like Teddy Bridgewater is pretty much a refined product. He's mediocre. Nothing wrong with that, but I don't think he's ever going to be a high-end starter. Cam Newton, I think, is finished, and I think Dwayne Haskins is finished. Also, Mitch Trubisky, I have no faith in. Do you disagree with any of that analysis, Dub? Anything that stands out to you?
You know, Marcus Mariota, your former guy, gave us a little tease late in the season when he filled in for an injured Derek Carr. And I got to tell you, I think he's got a lot left. He's a young guy. He's done it before, led his team to the playoffs. I think you may be underselling your former
quarterback. I've got him at 3 here. I love Marcus Mariota. And I would, if I were like the Patriots or if I were Washington and I could get him for a low cost, relatively speaking, there's been rumors that Washington and New England are both interested in him. I don't think that's a bad decision at all.
Yeah, I think the potential value combined.
Still only 27, by
yeah,
the way.
Yeah, the potential and also the value in terms of how much you'd have to pay for him, that might be number 1 to me.
He hasn't been able to stay healthy. That's been the biggest issue for Marcus Mariota throughout. The way he plays, he's just been injured far too frequently. If he could ever stay healthy, I still think he could get it done. We'll continue to talk about those players, I'm sure, quite a bit going forward. Up next, Bobby Barak. We'll talk about those with him as well.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Welcome back. Hope all of you are having a fantastic President's Day. We are rolling through the program here. Final hour of the show. We are here in the Farmers Outkick Studios. You can call 1-888-FARMERS to switch, and you could save a bundle on your auto insurance. Joined now by Bobby Barak. He is one of the writers at Outkick. You can follow him at Bobby Barak on Twitter. A lot of different stories to get into. But I want to start here with you, Bobby. I started off the show talking about this some in hour 1. And I'm fascinated by it because there's a clear sports connection here. Dana White has weighed in. Gina Carano, and I might be mispronouncing her name because I'm not that familiar with her as a actress or as a fighter for that matter. But she was in MMA. She went 7-1. She lost to Cyborg. And then she decided to step outside of MMA. She has become an actress. And a lot of people now know her as being on The Mandalorian, which is a show that has been very popular on Disney Plus. She got in trouble for comments that she made on Instagram And I didn't think the comments in the grand scheme of things were that controversial. And in fact, I talked about this some in the first hour, but I always think it's kind of important to talk about what exactly was said, because it's important to kind of contextualize where stories come from. She said this on Twitter, which is what led Disney to fire her from The Mandalorian. Jews were beaten in the streets, not by Nazi soldiers, but by their neighbors, even by children. Because history is edited, most people today don't realize that to get to the point where Nazi soldiers could easily round up thousands of Jews, the government first made their own neighbors hate them simply for being Jews. How is that any different from hating someone for their political views? Now, I'm not endorsing this because it's an inelegant comparison, because so far, people are not being rounded up based on their political views. But the analogy is she's trying to make is that is to analogize basically a different treatment based on a difference that exists in a culture, right? It's not a brilliant comparison, but neither is all of the liberal Hollywood elite out there who are saying, oh, Donald Trump is the same thing as Hitler. Not really any similarity at all there, frankly. But those comparisons don't cost anybody their job. She lost her job for this. What was your reaction? What is the reaction you have seen from others as it pertains to this result?
Yeah, Clay, as a rule, and I've said this many times, I don't like Holocaust analogies. I think most times they're distasteful. I just don't think they add much to the conversation. I think a lot of times it's distracting and, quite frankly, just false. So I didn't like the analogy, but I read it. And it wasn't fireable to me. And like you said, so many other people have made similar analogies, but a lot harsher, including her co-star, forgive me for getting his name, but he actually plays The Mandalorian, and he had made a very similar analogy, but towards Donald Trump in 2008, talking about how bad Trump is.
2018, he compared concentration camps to the situation at the border and basically said Trump is Hitler, right? Which is a comparison which many people in Hollywood have made over the past several years. Trump is a Nazi. Trump is Hitler. Like, this is a common analogy. It's a dumb analogy, but it's something that is very commonplace among the blue checkmark brigade, and none of those people get canceled from their jobs for making that comparison.
Well, in the day before she got let go by Disney's Lucasfilms production company, an ABC News anchor, so obviously Disney runs ABC News, he had also compared Donald Trump to Hitler, and that was a prepared segment that producers knew was coming out.
On the news, too.
On the news. So for that to happen so closely, and Clay, when I wrote about this, everybody said, well, she gave them a reason to fire her. Well, not really. What she did is she gave them the excuse that they've long wanted. Now, it came out in November that when Hollywood and those around that industry caught wind that she was a conservative, there was a campaign and there was blogs written to fire her. And you all know how much companies like Disney, Lucasfilm, Star Wars, all these major companies, they all bow down to those loud, semi-influential voices on Twitter and online. A lot of voices don't really matter, but they control decision-making on the highest level. So I think Disney saw that reaction, and they were looking for this excuse for a while. So was what she said fireable? No, but it gave Disney enough of an excuse. And like, obviously, the whole thing is unfortunate because she did not deserve that. Her coworkers said things that were worse. Her company, Disney, has made those same analogies, but anti-Trump, anti-conservative, for years, ever since Trump has been in office, including that same week. So I was so happy to see the Daily Wire, Ben Shapiro, and Jeremy Boring hook up with her and give her an opportunity to control her own path and produce and star in her own film, because that was a wake-up call to a lot of people. Clearly, a lot of these issues have been percolating for a long time. But when you bring in Star Wars, something that's so well known in the mainstream, they had a lot of people I talked to on and off the record say, wow, this thing is real, that if you had the views that she has that are really not that extreme, really just, you know, average day-to-day conservative views, you next could be fired just for having those views. And I thought Ben Shapiro made a good point on all this, is that anybody on that side, they could all be next. It's that simple.
Yeah.
And that's where we're at right now. And if people don't push back or give those opportunities, that side of the political spectrum, they're not going to have a very big voice because they're going to be afraid to make that public if you work at a place like Disney. And the same thing for AT&T, all those companies, they all have that same mindset. This was just an example of it, but it was a loud, impactful example of it.
And it's interesting because I do think, again, with her sports background, it ties into the conversations that exist in the world of sports today, but it also kind of crosses over into the culture of Hollywood. This is, for many people out there who want to talk about the historical relevancy of different times, back in the 1950s, there was an investigation into the communist influence in Hollywood, and many people were put onto lists and not allowed to work into Hollywood for their alleged connections to communism. And that was the Red Scare, you know, in the early days of the Cold War, as it was just beginning after World War II in the 1950s. And Hollywood basically said, never again will we allow a blacklist like this to come into our industry and rid so many people of the ability to make a living. Well, it's happening again. And it's happening because we don't have a balanced ability to have conversations in the culture right now. Because if Gina Carano shares the analogy that she did, she gets fired. But for all of the people out there who have been on Twitter rabidly calling Donald Trump Hitler for 4 or 5 years, all of those people still have jobs, and many of them have gotten a raise. They've gotten better jobs. Like, it's not a balanced marketplace of ideas when one side of the equation is getting canceled and the other side is getting rewarded for their political opinions.
Well, Clayton, that same male colleague of her, or a co-star, I forget his name again, the star in The Mandalorian, he has an offer now where he just accepted to star in an upcoming HBO Max series, The Last of Us. So he's still getting opportunities. And again, that's AT&T, Disney crossover, same mindset. And I think what the big thing is that I took away from this is that we're letting people like Disney, the producers, and Lucasfilm define what is right, what is wrong, and they're really setting the precedent. The problem I have with all this is that when you hear a lot of these people speak, talking about history, they don't even know what they're talking about. they're the ones, and these are the people that are trying to tell us what we can and cannot say about history. I mean, look at the stuff of Abraham Lincoln now. The media and celebrities have now joined together and said, okay, we accept that Abraham Lincoln, to look at him through the lens of modern day, that, oh, he was racist. And those are the same people that are saying this Holocaust analogy is right, this one's offensive. These people shouldn't be the arbiters of these decisions because they have no background or showing they even know anything about history, let alone get people fired for saying, well, that was offensive, or that one was a good taste. Actually, that one makes sense. They don't have the right to make those decisions.
All right, much less serious story, and we talked about this story a little bit earlier in the show as well. I read this in the Wall Street Journal over the weekend. I know we just got done with Valentine's Day, but there was a study that was done, and I want to read some of these results because I thought it was pretty funny. A study about whether or not women like men with cats. And I wish Danny G were working today because Danny G, producer on the show, has a cat. And a study was pretty clear. Wall Street Journal found a study. They basically took, for dating profile pictures, they took pictures of normal, straight, you know, men who were seeking to meet women, and they put them in their normal picture, and then they added a picture with the cat, and the cat declined the overall like rate substantially for single women out there who were looking for single men. If you had a dog, you were more attractive. If you were a man and you had a cat, women were not as interested in you. They found men with cats to be less masculine, more neurotic, and ultimately less dateable. That is an utter indictment of the male cat universe. Did this finding surprise you?
No, it didn't surprise me. But what I did is I was thinking, Clay, those guys that have cats were probably already lonely yesterday, not feeling great about themselves. They just see that come out. I mean,
shot across the bow for cat guy.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's like taking someone when they're down. Those guys were already down. And based on that study, they've probably been down in the past 3, 4, 5 Valentine's Day. So there's no looking up there. And the dog thing, I actually found that fascinating. Clay, if you put a dog in your picture on Match.com, you have 20% chance of a woman finding you.
20% more likely. You are 20% more attractive if you are a man with a dog in your profile picture. By the way, for gay men out there who are listening, gay men actually find men with cats to be attractive. All right. So for the gay men out there listening, gay men with cat pictures, they're 5% more likely. The finding was chicks don't want a guy with a cat. Direct finding. Where's Dub? Dub, you're a single guy right now. Does this not completely comport with what you would expect to find? Like, as a guy, if you were trying to make yourself more attractive in a profile picture, you go dog, you don't go cat. God forbid you went like snake or squirrel or pig or something like that. Only animal that women find attractive is a dog, right?
That's not surprising to me in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah. But I think we need Danny G, honestly, to defend single heterosexual men with cats because he's just killed himself with his cats.
So Clay, here's an important thing. So when I was in high school and Facebook was really taking off, people were trying to find what made them cool on Facebook. And the conclusion for guys was a selfie with sunglasses. That there was a study that said that is what works. That's not true. Just put a dog in your photo and you block out your face. That's the move. Forget the sunglasses. Forget the hat on backwards, the flannel shirt. None of that matters. 20% more likely to get a like if you have a dog in your online dating profile. Groundbreaking study there. And you really can't argue that. Now, cat guys are going to try to find little notes to push back on, but the stats are pretty clear there. Not good for them. Dog guys, things are looking up. Those that don't have pets might have to decide to get a dog.
This was a crazy finding as well. Like, this is from the same article in the Wall Street Journal. And by the way, young women, single women, so maybe it's possible that older women like men with cats. I don't know. But the quote here is, dogs are winning. They did another study. This is a pretty interesting study. In 2015, I want to see if this surprises either one of you. A peer-reviewed journal of the interactions of people and animals. Women reported being more likely to be attracted to a man because he had a pet. And they were much more likely to be attracted to men who had dogs. This is a study from France. They had 240 women ranging in age from 18 to 25. They were approached on the street by a handsome 20-year-old man, sometimes with a dog, sometimes without a dog. An attractive man was used because they wanted, obviously, it's hard to get phone numbers, and they wanted women to be attracted to him. The dog was just a mongrel with a medium-length black coat, chosen that the pet was perceived to be kind, dynamic, and pleasant. When the man was alone and he sought women's phone numbers, he got 9% of the women he approached gave him the number, which is pretty decent, but roughly 1 in 10. But when he was accompanied by the dog, he got 3 times as many phone numbers. Just by nothing else was changed except he's got a dog, women were 3 times as likely to trust him. Dub, does that result surprise you?
I'm not sure. I mean, the dog.
Do you have
always
a dog?
No, I don't have a dog. I don't have any pets. I'm not allowed to have pets.
What you should have is a dog based on that result.
I know. I need to find somewhere, a lease, where I'm allowed to have a dog. Maybe that would help me out here and there.
But 3 times. When I saw that, Bobby, when I saw that result, 9 good-looking dude going up to women, he gets a 9% success rate on phone numbers, adds a dog, he triples the likelihood that women will give them his phone number. It makes him that much more trustworthy that he has a dog.
Yeah, you know who I think the biggest losers in this study is? Are colleges. Because instead of going to college for 8 years, be a lawyer, 5 years, be an engineer, skip that. Go be a dog walker in a major city.
If you're a good-looking guy, I think you'll probably do fine anyway. But if you think about it, it does make some sense. Because I think what women are seeing when a man has a dog is that he's responsible enough to take care of something other than himself. And there are so many men out there who aren't even responsible enough to take care of themselves that it makes the women think, okay, this guy is at least trustworthy and reliable on some level. And I think that's what the dog is basically a stand-in for. The dog itself may be attractive, but the dog is often, I think, for women, a sign of, oh, this guy has got potential as a dad because he's able to take care of a dog on his own. I think that's the sort of the cue that biologically is being set off for women on what makes them more attractive. That's my theory anyway. You buy into it? You're a single guy. How old are you?
You talking to me or?
Yeah, you. I know Dub's 27. How old are you?
23.
What did you do for Valentine's Day?
Worked.
Do you have a girlfriend?
No.
No girlfriend. So do you have a dog?
I do have a dog, yeah. So
what, yeah, there you go. You're on your way to having a girlfriend.
So, yeah, I mean, so the study's encouraging, but maybe a little misleading.
Well, maybe not necessarily misleading. Maybe you're just not asking enough girls for their phone numbers. We're talking to Bobby Barak. You can read him at OutKick. Well, I was asking questions earlier. We've been talking about the quarterback decision-making going forward. And I was saying right now there – well, I'll get to this in a sec. I'll bring you back, and I want to ask your opinion on this quickly.
Be sure to catch live editions of OutKick, the coverage with Clay Travis, weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Welcome back. Final segment, Monday edition. I hope you're having a great holiday out there. This is the Farmers OutKick Studios. You can call Farmers today for a quote. Bobby Barak, OutKick writer, hanging out with us here on this President's Day. Bobby, as we went to break, I was talking about a story that we've discussed a little bit during the course of today's program. There are right now, I would imagine, basically six guys that it feels like are available, former first-round quarterbacks. Who do you think on this list has the best chance at a sort of reclamation project? All of these guys have been starters in the league. Dwayne Haskins, Cam Newton, Marcus Mariota, Carson Wentz, Jameis Winston, Teddy Bridgewater. That is six former first-round draft picks, all of whom have started substantial numbers of games in the NFL. If you had to buy stock in one of these six guys as a quarterback that could potentially be the next Ryan Tannehill, a former first-round pick who finds success elsewhere, Dwayne Haskins, Cam Newton, Marcus Mariota, Carson Wentz, Jameis Winston, Teddy Bridgewater, who would you buy stock in?
Well, for me, that's not a tough question because we saw Carson Wentz before he got hurt that year the Eagles won the Super Bowl. He was the leading candidate for MVP, so we saw him out of all those quarterbacks.
Remember, Cam won an MVP too.
Yeah, but he's been so bad since then. But I think Wentz, it was more recent. So I saw it with Wentz. I mean, I can't get the vision out of my head about how bad Cam Newton was with the Patriots. Now, as bad as Wentz was the Eagles, there was something there mentally, I think, when they drafted Jalen Hurts. Jay Glazer said that hurt his confidence. To me, now, I'm not that high in any of those six quarterbacks. You mentioned Ryan Tannehill. I don't know if I see that, but I think Ryan Tannehill fell in the right situation with Mike Vrabel, Derrick Henry behind him. But I would go Carson Wentz. And the biggest reason, Clay, not even just because of his potential, I think he's most likely to land in a good position. That's with the Indianapolis Colts. He has chemistry, a relationship with Frank Wright. That team is ready to win now. You put Carson Wentz behind that offensive line with that defense on the other side with that coaching staff. You already almost beat the Buffalo Bills in the playoffs with Phillip Rivers, who had nothing left. You Carson Wentz the immediate upgrade over that. You add Wentz to that team. That's a team that I could see maybe winning 1-2 playoff games next year with the Colts. I will say, of those names, Jameis Winston's an interesting case because he's in New Orleans. Now, Sean Payton seems so all in on Taysom Hill, but Sean Payton, maybe in a year from now, when he really learns how Wentz operates, could build an offense that could limit Jameis Winston's problems and enhance some of his pros, which we know is kind of a dead downfield passing. So those are the two that I would look at. The rest of those names, Dwayne Haskins, I think he's a bust. I would not take a chance on him at all. Your guy, Marcus Mariota, I wasn't impressed with him when he was even in Tennessee. I would not take a chance on him. And Cam Newton, I don't think he's good enough to be a backup on most teams.
Mitch Trubisky and Sam Darnold, by the way, could also be discussed in this group. Do you buy into Mitch Trubisky or Sam Darnold more so than you would Carson Wentz?
Yeah, well, not Trubisky, but Sam Darnold, yes, because we really don't know what Sam Darnold can be. He was put in such a bad position there with the Jets, especially last year with Adam Gase. To me, and also, I think those other names that you mentioned, those six names plus Trubisky making it seven, I think all of them carry somewhat of a damaged goods label with a lot of baggage to overcome. I don't think Darnold has that. I think he's young enough for a fresh start. If you're San Francisco, Denver, I think those two teams could really help build Sam Darnold. So if you're factoring him into that discussion, no question, I'm taking Sam Darnold. And I've watched a lot of Sam Darnold in college. Clay, I'm surprised that he hasn't been better. I look at him as someone that had very low bust potential. He's a smart guy. I think he throws an accurate ball. I still have confidence that he can be at least a above average quarterback, which for a lot of teams is better than what they have right now.
NFL ratings for the Super Bowl dropped a decent amount. Was that a function of the dominance that we saw from the Bucs and this not being a close game? Or do you think we've seen Super Bowl ratings hit their apex and we're going to continue to decline going forward?
Well, we're in a position right now where I think everything in TV is declining. But the problem is I don't know if it's peaked, because I think when they drop so low, there's always room to go up some. Like this Super Bowl, I think it was down to like 96 million if you factor in streaming and all that stuff. So could next year be 97, 98 when it's not a COVID year, where I think things will be a little toned down as far as politically? I still think that was a big factor in people choosing to watch or not watch the game. But overall, yes, I believe the numbers that used to be 110, 111, 112, those days are gone. And I thought, you know, I talked to somebody last year about this, because last year's numbers actually were off. Part of that was because it was a great game. But because of how wide the audience, the variety is for the Super Bowl, the person I talked to said that they're uniquely vulnerable to cord cutting. When you have a large amount of people like that that spreads all across demographics, your total number is more vulnerable to households that cut the cord. So that's definitely a factor in this. And Clay, and I think as you know this, people are just watching less TV, consuming things differently, and it hurt sports overall. Every single league was down this year. Now, the NBA was down massively. NFL was down about 10% in the regular season. But sports may have, quote-unquote, peaked just because there isn't the appetite to sit at home or during quarantine time, just sit down in front of a TV. And when you have so many options now, internet, Netflix, I don't think we're ever going to get back to the point where anything on TV is what motivates us and makes us look forward to it. Those times have changed. So I would predict this. Next year, the number will be up slightly because of all those things I just mentioned. And number two, as you said, that game was it felt so over early in the third quarter. That's pretty rare for a Super Bowl. Last time we had that was Denver-Seattle. And so usually you're going to get a closer game than that. So there's so many things working against this game. But overall, yes, I would say the numbers have peaked as far as reaching what they once were, which was well over 100 million. Those days are gone.
What do you think Adam Silver's reaction was when he saw that Mark Cuban had stopped playing the national anthem?
Yeah, I was shocked because I thought the NBA would back Cuban up. I was fully expecting the NBA to put out a press release or leak it to one of their insiders and say, we fully support Mark Cuban. I mean, the NBA has mostly sided with stuff like that. You have to wonder, though, does business get in the way there? Because as much as the NBA wants to side with some of those causes that Cuban promotes, I think they know that'd be bad business. They saw the NBA finals were down 54% or so year over year. I think Adam Silver knew, hey, this is bad business. But I was interested because you mentioned the reaction, Clay. Outside of you, how many people in sports media pushed back against Mark Cuban? The number was small.
Well, it's a good point. And by the way, I've invited Mark Cuban on this radio program because I don't run from people who disagree with me. I mean, we have a big forum. We're the biggest sports talk radio show anywhere in the nation for morning radio. So, I mean, anybody's welcome to come on if they're newsmakers. Mark Cuban is running the other direction. But I think that's – we started off talking with you about the Gina Carano situation. I mean, I think one reason why this show is doing so well is because – everybody else out there says the same thing. Like, they're afraid to point out hypocrisies in the world of sports because they're worried about whether Adam Silver or Mark Cuban or somebody else who's in a powerful position in sports is mad at them. And I just don't care. I mean, I say exactly what I think every single day. And I think, frankly, it's one reason why you're doing well at OutKick and why our web site in general is doing so well is because there just aren't very many honest places in the world of sports media now. In fact, you can argue that OutKick is one of the very few, certainly, that's independent.
Well, Clay, and you're right about that. And, you know, I think that was last Wednesday that news came down. And on the TV side, nobody really gave an honest, distinguishable opinion on it that I saw. And I was watching for until about 8:45 that night. And it was actually Will Cain, who used to work at ESPN, saying, hey, if you make me choose, he's a lifelong Mavericks fan. He goes, if you make me choose between the Mavericks and America, that won't be a hard choice. I'm going to choose America. And that really got me thinking. I think that's how a lot of former or basketball fans think, but that opinion, it seems so odd because nobody else would say that. Though Clay, I'm very positive that a good portion of the country agrees with that, and you see that with the numbers, that people feel that they're having to choose between the sport they love and the country, and a lot of people are choosing the country, and the media has done such a disservice because they don't represent that point of view.
I don't think there's any doubt. Bobby Barak, keep up the good work. Have a good week, my man. Fingers crossed that I'm going to be able to get on this flight to Mexico. Hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, Clay. Sounds good.
That is Bobby Barak finishing off the show here. I appreciate all of you hanging out with us on the Monday edition of the program. Lots of guys already out there on their vacations. Dub, what do you think the chances are that I'm going to be able to get on my flight and get to Mexico?
Man, I'm praying for you, Clay, because it was mentioned earlier in the show with Chad Withrow. The North is prepared for this kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt. We
down here, it's going to take at least a day or two to kind of get everything back on their feet. So I'm putting the odds at 50-50 right now.
Yeah, I'm really kind of intrigued to see what's going to end up happening with this. Because the one thing I don't want to do is get to the airport and then find out that my flight's canceled. And then I have to turn around and drive all the way back in the snow, right? Like, I just want to get there. If I'm going to be able to take off, that's great. If I'm not going to be able to take off, and I feel like the challenge is going to be figuring out, you know, what the status is of that flight going forward. It's going to be a mess. Bobby Barak. Thanks to him. I encourage you to go check out Chad Withrow and also my buddy Lance Taylor. Special holiday edition of the show. I know a lot of you work on President's Day. So what is this, like five straight holidays we've worked? I don't want to brag or draw attention to myself, but what is this now? This is so far this year. We worked on New Year's Day. We worked on New Year's Eve. We worked on, let's see, what else do we work? We worked MLK Day, and now we're working on Valentine's Day. We worked on Valentine's weekend or whatever, President's Day. That's a pretty good start to the year. I got to start taking some more days off. Got the crew coming in and hanging out. I think Jonas Knox and Jeff Schwartz have got the rest of this week's shows. Hope you enjoy them. I hope I get down to Mexico. Regardless, I'll be back 1 week from today. Same bat time, same bat channel. But OutKick will be fresh and brand new. 12 more hours this week with Jonas Knox and with Jeff Schwartz. This has been OutKick. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us on Fox Sports Radio.